Talks is a weekly podcast featuring federal program staff from the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia's public schools. For many individuals, the purpose of federally funded programs is unknown. Through its Fed Talk series, the Georgia Department of Education is sharing more information on the ways Georgians are leveraging federal funds to serve Georgia students and Georgia schools. Welcome to Fed Talks.
Welcome back, everybody, to our third podcast in this series on Georgia's systems of continuous improvement. Once again, we're joined by our colleagues in school and district effectiveness, and I'll have them introduce themselves again in a moment, but I want to introduce my esteemed colleagues here asking the questions. So I'll go ahead and introduce yourself.
Sure. Zelphine Smith-Dixon, Special Education.
Good afternoon, Craig. This is John White with Federal Programs.
All right, John, and you want to get the ball rolling on this
podcast? Sure. We'll let you guys introduce yourself real quick, just to remind everyone who's here. Go ahead, Patty.
Sure. In school improvement, school and district effectiveness, Patty Brooks. I'm area program manager for the South area of the state.
Sam Taylor, area program manager for school and district effectiveness.
Faya Paul, state director for school and district effectiveness.
So, everybody, that's who's here. So, we've been talking in our series about the Georgia Systems of Continuous Improvement and the framework that we operate through it. Sam, you mentioned in our first episode, this was a common framework of how we can talk together, right? Yeah,
right?
Of how all schools can talk together. And we've talked a lot about the five systems that are within our framework. But on the outside of our framework is a problem-solving process, right? And it talks about how we go about identifying and solving problems. And that's really the focus of this session today. So my question is, can you guys just talk to us about that problem-solving cycle, how it works, and how it's involved at the different levels of the schoolhouse?
As defined by the U.S. Ed, there are five steps. And that's the five steps of the how. That's the continuous improvement process, the how. When we talked about the systems previously, that's the what. So I want to talk about the how, and there's five steps. The first step is to identify the need. And then the second step is to select the intervention. This third step is to plan the implementation. The fourth step is to implement the plan, what I like to refer to as the execution. And the fifth step is to examine the progress. And as Dr. Rooks indicated earlier in a previous podcast, that you can take that how and you can apply it to each of the what. Those are the systems. And it's just continuous. You take it through there and you identify it, and you all the way through examining the results. And what Dr. Paul said in a previous podcast, it's continuous. It's continuous. You make adjustments, and it's a continuous cycle.
So my first question is this what the principal does? The principal does this work. He's the only one who, or she's the only one who has to do the problem-solving process. Is that fair to say?
No, it's the work of everyone in the school. It's the work of the leadership team, in terms of looking at the school, what the school is doing at large, grade level by grade level, content area by content mm-hmm. area. It's the work of the teacher in the classroom and what's occurring within the classroom, and how to move academic achievement forward through, just as mm-hmm. Dr. Taylor indicated, through all of the five systems.
And I think a great example would be, oftentimes teachers do this most commonly through their data analysis, or at least pieces of it. Looking at student achievement data, whether it's formal or informal from their classroom, or summative assessment data, but looking at that data to identify a need. And the typical plan that we see is tutorials or some form of an after-school remediation. And then they assess their students through their attendance and their performance on whether or not that intervention has been effective after they've had days or weeks or months of implementation of that particular standard or domain or whatever topic they're covering. And then they examine that data at the end to determine, do we continue to offer tutorials on these same particular topics? And then I think our students take that same walk. They receive their test scores or their data, and they decide, do I need to attend tutorials? Do I need to talk to mom and dad and ask for an extra coach to aid me in my plan of closing the gap of understanding on this particular subject area or topic? And we work that plan, and we sign up for the tutorials and those sessions and those exercises at home for reinforcement or in conjunction with the school. And then we come back to another quiz or another test to determine whether or not mastery has been demonstrated. But that too, from the teacher level to the student level, are prime examples of how the problem-solving process, which we're saying is the continuous cycle, is often implemented on a regular basis.
Right. So a classroom teacher might be thinking about her lesson she's getting ready to do, mm-hmm. right? And she, do you think a classroom teacher would go through that problem-solving cycle as they're planning? Let's say she's teaching a science lesson, and she knows the day before they didn't get topic A. So that might inform what she's going to teach today, right? So they go through that process too.
Yes, and I think earlier on a podcast, you asked oftentimes, what are some of the common practices that we see that have been impactful with schools? And that would be one through the form of collaborative planning. So oftentimes, yes, the data is driving the plans of that instruction to decide what needs to be pulled back in, what may need a little bit longer time, or maybe I used a strategy when we talked about professional development. That strategy may have been trained to us, but it didn't yield strong results with transfer to students when we performed it. So do I need to go back and work on a portion of that particular strategy, or do we start from scratch in that planning and use our peers to aid us in helping to reach our students with mastery?
And, you know, just to add to that, teachers don't do this in isolation. They come together in collaborative planning, professional learning communities, to look critically and carefully at the data to determine whether or not students are moving forward as they should, either individually, small group, or perhaps even a classroom. And they work together to make the necessary modifications and changes to either the curriculum, strategies that they're using, or providing additional support.
Right, but even when teachers are in front of the kids teaching, saying something, they're doing it right there, right? They're automatically looking at the audience, getting their feedback, and they're changing how they're saying things, how they're moving Billy from seat A to seat C, whatever they're doing. They're actually going through that. Now, I would conjecture that at the classroom level, that cycle that you're talking about is going very, very, very fast.
Yes.
But maybe at the district level where they're trying to implement a new intervention, it might go slowly because you need to collect data over time. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to think about it that way?
Yes, I would agree. I would agree.
Because I think the teacher, like you said, is on the spot, and the teacher is reading the body language and the expression of the students right away, whereas the district, you don't get that. So, right, yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
And I think it's a combination at the school level, because what you're referencing to is the teacher taking informal data in that moment in the classroom about what's going on. But teachers also look at long-term data over a period of time to look at trends for their lesson planning. Mm-hmm. Schools then pick that up when they do comprehensive needs assessments, and they look at their end-of-year summative data to make plans for the professional development or the training that needs to occur during the school year. And then, yes, the district picks it up and says, what are the patterns that I see in my schools when they do their comprehensive needs to determine who's not being reached or what area needs some additional support? And then they make year-long and sometimes multiple-year plans, which lead into their strategic plans. And so this work is very interwoven and intentional, and that's why you consistently hear us saying it's appropriate for every level when we talk about problem-solving and closing gaps and reaching all students.
So I think that was a great point, and it really leads me to my next question, which has to do with the needs assessment. And I'm trying to understand within the larger context of the systems of continuous improvement, why is the needs assessment so critical?
I think one of the things that we've consistently talked about is making sure that we are targeting and working on the right work, as we sometimes like to say. And so I think the needs assessment, it allows you to say, this subgroup is not performing well, but why? okay, this subgroup is not performing well because we are not doing well with the reading content area. But why? This subgroup is not doing well with the reading strategies because teachers have not been taught how to teach reading. But why? And the further you dig down into that why, and you keep asking that why, you find yourself finding the root cause to the problem, and that becomes the work or the plan that has to be created to address that identified need, and then you implement it, and then you examine it, and then you determine what the next step needs to become after that. And it kind of reminds you with the parent. You know, the student or the child at home has a dirty room. Why? You were supposed to clean it up. You didn't clean up your room because you didn't have enough time, but why? Because you were playing a Nintendo game of some sort. And so we have to approach our work that same way in making sure that if I want the room clean, the TV has to be off between the hours of 3 to 5. And once the room is clean and up to par, or you've earned that, then I give that back. And so we look at our work that same way. I need to make sure that I put structures and systems in place that support the production or the productivity to ensure that we're reaching that subgroup or those children in that very same fashion.
So I think you've said something key that we addressed during an earlier podcast, and I think that goes back to the problem solving process. Mm-hmm. And the possibility of how those systems aren't isolated, because what right. I heard you describe would actually go back to the systems, and it certainly would connect to the needs assessment.
And I think, just to add to that, the needs assessment, as Dr. Paul alluded to, allows you to take a deep look. But I think on the surface, and put it in layman's terms, the needs assessment allows you to cast a wide net, so you're not just focusing on a piece of the problem, you're focusing on the entire situation. And so that's why you need a needs assessment, so you can make sure that you have understanding of all the things that are operating, the issues that are going on. And then after you decide those priorities, then you drill down and get the why.
Why is broad stakeholder engagement so important when you're going through that process?
Well, because you want to look at your entire geographical area that you're serving. And you want to make sure that you have included all the kids. You may have a few kids who are in the category of migrant. And so you want to make sure that you have included them, and you're looking at all the students that you're serving, special needs kids. You may have a small population. You may have an N size of 16. You may have 1,200 kids, but they're still significant. So you want to make sure that you're looking at all the children that you're serving in your school.
So having their parents there in the needs assessment process may right. be of great value, because mm-hmm. the parents may share insights as you're going through the why process mm-hmm. that a school may not have realized.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Definitely. They bring our parents, our community members, bring a different perspective to the table. And just as you said, they can assist us in terms of being certain that we truly have identified the needs at hand and the going back to the root causes. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't identify the root cause, we may not be able to meet that need as effectively and efficiently as we should.
And so I don't know that we would have time during this podcast, but something that you've said that really I think listeners would benefit from, and it's going to be even when the district has done it right, even when the school has done it right, and all these pieces are in place, there's still that chance that an individual child can get lost yeah. in between the cracks. And so I think what listeners are wanting to hear is, above and beyond the district process, the right. school process, how do I ensure that the whole child needs are being met for every kid, mm-hmm. even if there's yeah. not a subgroup issue? And I don't expect us to be able to address
it
on this podcast.
That's a great place for us to
end
this particular podcast, and we will wrap up with one more in this series the next time. So thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.